Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, October 18th, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Experts, El Niño, Other Factors Impact Outlook. Unusual October Snow Not Necessarily a Sign of Wet Winter, by Lenore Sabota. Lincoln. The snow experienced in parts of central Illinois last Friday night might have been a bit of a shock, but it's not an indication of things to come, say weather experts. It was a little unusual, but it does happen, said Matt Barnes, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Lincoln. You can't really draw any conclusions from that. State climatologist Jim Angel agrees. You might think that seeing snow early will doom you to a snowy winter, but it doesn't. A lot of these early snows are kind of a freak, Angel said. We think of weather as local, but a lot of it is the big global patterns, he said. Anchorage was unusually warm the day it was snowing here. Talk of a likely El Niño, an area of unusually warm water forming in the Pacific that can affect weather patterns, has people wondering about the potential for a mild winter in the Midwest. But that is only one factor that is considered when the National Climate Prediction Center issues its winter outlook on Thursday. A lot of people want to put a lot of stock in El Niño's effect on Illinois, but it's not as simple as that, said Barnes. The center also relies on computer models that project general atmospheric conditions, historical data, and recent seasonal trends, he said. Earlier this month, the Climate Prediction Center issued a statement that there was a 70-75% chance of an El Niño to form in the next couple of months and continue through the Northern Hemisphere's 2018-19 winter. The big question is how strong it is going to be, said Angel. A strong El Niño has a more strong impact on the Midwest, he said. Usually, for us in Illinois, a strong El Niño means more warm days and usually less snow, he said. But this one is shaping up to be more weak at this point, so it might not be quite as dramatic as in the past, said Angel. Other factors can have a stronger impact on the Midwest and central Illinois, such as the polar vortex, a large pocket of cold air that parks near the North Pole, Angel explained. But when it comes to movement or growth of that vortex, you can't forecast that more than a week or so out, he said. AccuWeather, a private meteorology business, issued a special report earlier this month predicting that El Niño will influence winter weather across the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Great Lakes regions. According to AccuWeather's forecast, the Midwest will enjoy a mild start to the season with a dramatic change in temperatures in January and February, according to Paul Pastelak, AccuWeather's long-range forecaster. Although cold weather is likely, snowfall is likely to remain below normal with less frequent storms than usual, according to AccuWeather. It won't be a big year for snow in the major cities like Chicago and Minneapolis, said Pastelak. As for the recent cold pattern experienced in areas such as Bloomington and Decatur, it will be with us through at least the next 7 days and probably beyond that, Barnes said. It's largely the result of a big trough of low pressure in the Great Lakes and Canada, he said, which is also holding down the chances of precipitation in the area. There is a slight chance of rain on Friday, but only 30%. Big swings in temperature are pretty typical in spring and fall in central Illinois, said Angel. However, what made the recent swings seem more dramatic than usual was that below normal temperatures were preceded by warm that was well above normal, not necessarily record, but pretty darn close to it, he said. The beginning of a season doesn't necessarily predict the rest of it. Angel noted that last winter was kind of upside down. It was quiet until March. Even the less-than-scientific Farmer's Almanac and Old Farmer's Almanac can't agree. The former says winter will be biting cold, snowy in Illinois, while the latter predict Illinois' winter will be warm and wet. Angel laughed when asked about weather folklore based on such things as the color and direction of travel of woolly bear caterpillars or woolly worms. Angel said he has seen dark ones and light ones, both northbound and southbound. There's no consensus among the woolly worms, he said. The next story is headlined, Pleura's name Bob Ebb Brady in $1.8 million suit, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. A Leroy physician and attorney has filed a $1.8 million lawsuit against Bob and Ed Brady, who he claims have defaulted on a loan. Thomas Pleura and his wife Pam filed the lawsuit Tuesday in McLean County, claiming the Bradys borrowed $1 million through a loan agreement dated October 29, 2010, but since have failed to make any principal or interest payments. Interest on the loan, compounded monthly, has accumulated to $808,429.71 as of Tuesday, according to the lawsuit. When reached Wednesday, Pleura declined to comment further. I think it is self-explanatory, and there really isn't much more to add, he said. The Bradys, who are brothers and own Brady Homes, headquartered in Bloomington, could not be reached for comment Wednesday. According to the lawsuit, the Bradys signed a standard promissory note and promised to pay the principal and interest to the Pleuras in full on or before May 2, 2011. Interest payments were to be calculated and paid at the rate of 6%. The lawsuit also asks to recover attorneys' fees and court costs incurred in the enforcement and collection of the amounts due. Additional interest since the lawsuit was filed will also accrue, according to the documents. The payments were to be made on the first day of each month to Pleura's office in Leroy. The loan documents were signed by both Bradys. As collateral, the Bradys listed four rental apartment buildings in the 1700 block of Rockingham Drive in Normal. The court documents indicate the Pleuras have asked the Bradys for repayment of the loan, but the Bradys have refused to pay. The complaint does not specify how the money was used. State Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington, another brother involved with Brady Homes, was named as a respondent in discovery, indicating he may have evidence in the case, but he is not named as a defendant. A court date to hear the complaint has not yet been set. The next article is entitled, Father's Lawyer Told to Pay Fees. Federal Judge Rebukes Attempt to Move Case, by Edith Brady Lunny. Peoria. A federal judge has sanctioned the lawyer for a Massachusetts man involved in a controversial McLean County custody case, ordering her to pay legal fees to opposing counsel and attend professional training for her failure to follow court rules. Diane Nordby, the attorney for Michael Cadena, was ordered to attend a Massachusetts Bar Association course and pay $750 in legal fees to Tristan Bullington, the Bloomington lawyer for Amber Buck, who was the mother of 4-year-old Mikey Cadena. Bullington requested $2,120 in legal fees for his research and work on a possible reply to Nordby's federal court filing. The bill for legal fees was submitted as part of the federal judge's proposed sanctions. In a sharply worded rebuke, Judge James Shadid, Chief United States District Court Judge for the Central District of Illinois, repeated his October 2nd opinion of Nordby's filing that attempted to move the custody case from McLean County Court to federal court. The judge gave Nordby until October 9th to explain why she did not violate court rules that exclude the filing of a custody matter in federal court. In her response, Nordby argued the request to move the case was proper under federal rules. In his order, Shadid called Nordby's lengthy response well-crafted, but he disagreed with her conclusions. In a statement to the Pantograph on Wednesday, Nordby said, "I respect the court's decision today and am grateful that they did not require us to pay the full amount that opposing counsel requested." She said her efforts to transfer the case to federal court in Illinois followed the mandate of the Illinois Rules of Professional Conduct for lawyers that requires them to take all lawful and ethical measures required to assist a client. "At the end of the day, we saw a chance to get into federal court, and we took it," said Nordby, adding that she is proud to be an attorney who will fight hard and do her utmost best for her clients, even if that means taking a risk or getting yelled at by a judge. The Kadena custody fight has grown more heated over the past several months since McLean County Associate Judge Lee Ann Hill found Kadena in direct criminal contempt of court and ordered his arrest. Buck was reunited with her son October 3rd after she traveled to Massachusetts and retrieved him from Kadena's family after the father's arrest. A short video of the child at the Weymouth, Massachusetts Police Department went viral after Kadena posted it online. Buck's lawyer said the child is adjusting well to life with his mother. On Monday, Kadena's warrant that allowed him to be extradited for contempt was recalled, allowing him to be released. But if he returns to Illinois, he will be arrested and held in jail for 6 months as punishment for his refusal to comply with multiple court orders to return to Illinois with the child. Kadena contends his son was physically abused by Buck during the time she had custody of the child. She has denied the allegations. Both parents have been convicted of drug offenses and lost custody while their cases were pending. Buck currently is on probation for a drug charge. Here's a story headlined, "Ameren Agents Take to Streets to Warn of Scams." Groups visit small businesses downtown to spread awareness. By Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. The most common utility scam scenario involves a person who poses as power company representative, calls a customer, and threatens to disconnect service if the customer does not make an immediate payment. Jenny Knuth, the manager of Ivy Lane Bakery at 405 North Main in Bloomington, knows the drill. "I've had it happen," Knuth told representatives of Ameren, Illinois, on Wednesday morning. "I know all of the different scams, and once we had someone call here, and I didn't give them our account number. I knew the bills had been paid, and it was just a scam." Knuth and Ivy Lane Bakery didn't lose any money, but Ameren, Illinois spokeswoman Marceline Love said small businesses are common targets because they yield higher dollar amounts than individual residential accounts. The bakery store was one of about 40 businesses Ameren, Illinois representatives visited Wednesday morning in downtown Bloomington as part of a comprehensive public education campaign the company is implementing this week. Businesses received scam awareness magnets and flyers. "We have been making efforts over the years to continuously get the word out about utility scams," she said. "We have seen an uptick over the years, and it is a continuous effort to make sure our customers are aware of the possible scams." Recently, a customer in Bloomington received a call from someone claiming to represent Ameren's disconnect department. The caller advised the customer to purchase a money pack in the amount of $998.85 from a local grocery store to avoid immediate disconnection. Since Ameren, Illinois began tracking utility scam metrics in 2014, more than 4,000 customers have reported being contacted by a scammer, resulting in upwards of $140,000 paid out. "In 2018 alone, more than 700 customers have been contacted to date," said Marceline Love, a spokeswoman for the company. "There are various ways to scam a customer," she said. Sometimes people are dressed in fake uniforms, or sometimes they call and identify themselves as an Ameren representative. They say, if you don't pay an X amount of dollars within an hour, we are going to disconnect your service. Love said that businesses are often targeted because of the number of bills that come into a business, and they may call at a busy time. They may also get into contact with an employee who is not an owner and convince them to send money or risk having the power disconnected. Communications coordinator Kelly Turner said targets include small business owners, senior citizens, and non-English speaking persons. They request immediate payment via prepaid money card, credit card, or bank account information. They often indicate a utility worker is on the way to shut the power off. If you have been contacted by someone impersonating Ameren, hang up the phone or close the door and call Ameren at 1-800-755-5000, she said. Never give out personal information such as bank account numbers, usernames or passwords, credit card information, or social security numbers. About 12 volunteers broke into four groups to visit several of the downtown businesses. I appreciate the visit, said Frank Hoffman, an attorney at 401 North Main in Bloomington. We don't accept sales calls of any kind, and my assistant screens everything, so normally we don't have much of a problem, but it's nice that they are getting the word out. Here's an election story entitled Blair Summer Talks Spending at Forum by Derek Bay. Normal. Your vote for the State House may boil down to a simple question. How long is too long for a legislator to serve? I was shocked to learn that our current representative has been in office for almost 20 years. If we weren't happy with our state government, why would we continue to send the same representative? Said Democratic challenger Jill Blair of Bloomington about Republican State Representative Keith Summer of Morton. We need to talk a great deal more about what we all have in common and what hopes and vision we share, then act to fulfill them, said Summer, of how to fix state government. I am optimistic that by truly working together, we can turn these challenges into opportunities that will benefit all. Blair and Summer spoke about that and many other issues during an hour-long forum Wednesday at the Illinois State University Alumni Center. Summer, a longtime Central Illinois real estate broker, pushed for reduced government spending but with some consideration for social services, while Blair stumped for a progressive income tax, taxing the wealthier at a higher rate, and spending the proceeds on education and the social safety net. In 1970, when we wrote the flat tax into our Constitution, CEOs made about 20 times the average worker's salary. Today, that's more like 300 times, said Blair, a former Heartland Community College administrator. A flat tax system is failing us. We need folks who make $300,000 or more per year to pay their fair share in taxes. I'm glad the 88th Illinois House District was redrawn into this portion of McLean County because it's given me better perspective on the needs of the citizens of Illinois, said Summer. Previously, my districts had been small-town, rural people who believe in self-sufficiency and get-out-of-our-way government. There are others who need more services from their state government. Of pensions, Summer said he'd like to revisit how much state workers receive in benefits. He voted against a 2013 overhaul, later ruled unconstitutional. While Blair said benefits increases are a small fraction of the pension crisis and rejected benefit changes. Both support restructuring state payments. Summer said job growth is the best way to increase state revenue, and the candidates agreed small business development needs to be a high priority for the state. Summer said fewer regulations and incentives for big businesses would help, and Blair spoke in favor of investing in education and offering a public option for health care. Both said they're willing to work independent of party infrastructure and it showed in their ideas to address infrastructure needs. Blair said a vehicle mileage tax, which Democratic governor nominee J.B. Pritzker has discussed but specifically not endorsed, has merit. And Summer supported letting all counties levy a motor fuel tax, which many state leaders have rejected. Some more election news is in an article headlined, Londrigan outraises Davis in third quarter with $1.7 million, by Bernard Schoenberg. Springfield. Betsy Dirksen Londrigan, the Springfield Democrat challenging U.S. Representative Rodney Davis in the 13th Congressional District, raised more than twice as much money as Davis from July through September, campaign finance reports show. In the three-month period, Londrigan reported to the Federal Election Commission that the total raised by her campaign was just shy of $1.7 million. In the same period, Davis, the Republican from Taylorville, reported raising about $703,000. For the full election cycle to date, Davis has raised slightly more than Londrigan, $3.09 million to $3.04 million. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee issued a news release showing that the 13th District is part of a pattern in four highly contested races for the U.S. House in Illinois. Republican incumbents also were outraised by their Democratic opponents in three other districts. Democrat Sean Casten raised almost $2.7 million compared with $1.4 million for Representative Peter Roskam in the 6th. Democrat Brendan Kelly brought in more than $1.1 million compared with $552,000 for Representative Mike Bost in the 12th. And Democrat Lauren Underwood raised more than $2 million in her 14th district race against Representative Randy Holtgren, who raised about $455,000. Democratic candidates across Illinois are benefiting from widespread grassroots support and a wave of high energy and voter enthusiasm, said Sean Savitt, spokesman for the DCCC. The Davis totals in the 13th don't include what he took in last week when Vice President Mike Pence drew 225 people to a Davis fundraiser at Panther Creek Country Club in Springfield. The minimum ticket was $500, but many people paid more to get their picture taken with Pence. The campaign amounts reported to the FEC by the campaigns also don't reflect independent expenditures by outside groups benefiting Davis and Londrigan. Women Vote, a political action committee of Emily's List, which promotes pro-choice women for office, and the DCCC have combined to spend more than $1 million in support of Londrigan or against Davis. And the Congressional Leadership Fund, a super PAC backed by U.S. House GOP leadership, including Speaker Paul Ryan, has been running ads attacking Londrigan. The Washington Post reported last month that the group had decided to back Davis with a $1 million effort. The next story is entitled, Doctors announce challenge gift for YMCA project. Pair pledged to match up to $200,000 toward new, larger location. By Paul Sweech. Bloomington. Plans for a new, larger Bloomington Normal YMCA building to include Easter Seals Central Illinois on the OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center campus took another step toward reality on Wednesday when two doctors announced a $200,000 challenge gift. Dr. Jerry Oakey, an orthopedic surgeon, and his wife, Dr. Laura Randolph, a plastic surgeon, pledged to match contributions to the YMCA building project from fellow healthcare providers, up to $200,000. If the challenge is met, that would mean $400,000 toward meeting the $4 million challenge gift announced in September. That gift, from a Bloomington Normal family who has chosen to remain anonymous, must be matched by the community by December 31st in order for the $4 million to be received, YMCA Executive Director B.J. Wilkin has said. As of Wednesday, the YMCA needed another $1.2 million to reach the $4 million challenge goal, Wilkins said. The total project cost is $16 million. Wilkins said that $12 million has been raised so far. Lifelong Bloomington Normal area residents, Oki and Randolph, have been supporters of the YMCA and Easter Seals. Often in our community, we encourage nonprofit organizations to collaborate, Oki said in a statement. Here we have one of the finest examples coming true with the Y and Easter Seals. Everyone will benefit through this project. Randolph said, Easter Seals does so much for young people in our community, and to have a new state-of-the-art Y facility that can serve the whole family just makes so much sense. Physicians in this community are so generous with their time and talent, and Jerry and I felt we needed to contribute to helping this dream come true. YMCA announced in April that it hopes to move from its longtime home south of downtown Bloomington, 602 South Main Street, to a new 70,000-square-foot building on the St. Joseph campus, 2200 East Washington Street, Bloomington. The proposed building would front Washington Street with St. Joseph Drive and the Medical Center to the north, and OSF's under-construction medical office building to the west. OSF donated 6 acres of land valued at $3 million to the YMCA. YMCA has outgrown its existing 40,000-square-foot building, which is landlocked and can't be expanded, Wilkins said. In addition to larger YMCA facilities, the planned building would include leased space for Easter Seals to relocate its therapy and counseling programs from 2404 East Empire Street, Bloomington, Easter Seals Central Illinois CEO Steve Thompson has said. Here's an item entitled, Ameren Continues Local Upgrades, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Ameren crews have been busy in downtown Bloomington installing underground network transformers. This will give us the ability to better remotely monitor and control the system, and that includes system disconnectability in case of emergencies or something like that, said utility spokeswoman Marceline Love. Love said it is part of the company's effort to update the electric system throughout the company's coverage area. We have been doing these upgrades in downtown Bloomington the last 2 years, she said. It is part of our overall efforts to increase reliability and to also increase redundancy of the system in the case of an outage. There should be no power outages associated with the work, which will be ongoing for a few more months. And we have some road closure notices. Airport Road. Airport Road between Fort Jesse and Huntington Road will be closed to all traffic beginning at 10 p.m. Thursday through the morning commute on Friday for traffic line painting. Drivers must use alternate routes. Congerville Road. Congerville Road, CH 55 and 350 East Road, between 1950 and 2050 North Roads, will be closed to through traffic Thursday, weather permitting, for culvert replacement. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for October 18th. Please stay tuned.